On January 15, 2021, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute Friday Forum featured third-term Montana Senator John Tester discussing some of the challenges for the 117th Congress in a time of social division and media mistrust, as well as opportunities to move America forward with respect and common purpose. The session was conducted online, with moderator Paula Beswick relaying questions from the audience.
Welcome. This is our first Friday Forum of 2021. And my name is Paula Beswick. I'm a volunteer with Osher Lifelong Learning at Montana State University and the Bozeman Public Library Foundation. So many of us know Senator John Tester as a third generation farmer from Big Sandy and a former music school teacher, but he is also a proud grandfather who was first elected to the Montana Senate in 1998 after having served on the Big Sandy School Board. So I guess the school board is the jumping off point. He was elected to the United States Senate in 2006. He was voted back in 2012 and again in 2018. In the Senate, he is an outspoken voice for rural America. I think we will hear a little bit about that when he talks about his book. He is also an advocate for small businesses. He's a champion for responsible energy development, sportsmen's issues, and clean air and clean water. Senator Tester serves as a ranking member of the Veterans Affairs Committee and as a member of the Senate Commerce, Indian Affairs, Banking, and Appropriations Committees. Thank you so much for joining us, Senator Tester. We'd love to hear a bit about your book, Grounded, A Senator's Lessons on Winning Back Rural America, and your thoughts on some of the challenges and opportunities for the 117th Congress as America moves forward with respect and common purpose. So again, thank you during this crazy time for joining us. Look forward to hearing from you, Senator Tester. I will jump back on with questions when you're done.
Okay, well, thank you, Paula. I appreciate it. Hopefully you can all hear me. It is coming to you from my farm west of Big Sandy, and I hope everybody's doing all right. It's been a rough go the last 8 days or so, 9 days, but we'll get into that in a little bit, I'm sure, with a few questions. But I want to start off by thanking Paula for taking the time to organize this forum, and I want to thank everybody for taking time out of their day and engage in this discussion of issues. Look, we're about halfway through January, and 2021 is already off to a rocky start, at least from my perspective. As you all know, last week there were a group of domestic terrorists that stormed the U.S. Capitol. As my colleagues and I worked to verify and ratify the presidential election results, for the first time in 207 years. The United States Capitol was breached, and it was breached by people whose intent was not only to harm our nation's elected officials, but also to stop our democracy cold in its tracks. These extremists, spurred on by the dangerous rhetoric of these times, had one goal: to subvert the results of a democratic election. And I just want to say thanks to the efforts to our brave law enforcement personnel and to the National Guard, this coup attempt was foiled. But January 6, 2021 will live on in infamy, serving as a dangerous example of what happens when those in power pit Americans against Americans. And it proves that unity is the only path forward. Otherwise, we don't have a path at all. Next week, my colleagues and I, Republicans, Democrats, Independents alike, we'll work to ensure that a peaceful transfer of power takes place as it has for the last 240 years. And under this new administration, and a Senate that is split right down the middle, we must forge ahead with a message of unity and courage and fix the cracks in our now very fragile democracy. We need to lead, and we need to lead well to bring America back together and focus on the needs of our people. And our people need to know that our government has their backs. That we'll get them to the other side of this coronavirus pandemic in one piece and get our economy back on track, that we won't leave folks in rural America. So I'll be reaching across the aisle every chance I get to ensure that Montanans have the resources they need to keep living in the last best place. But because, contrary to popular belief, most things aren't partisan. We all want good paying jobs. We all want to improve our health care. We all want clean air and clean water. We all want quality public education. We all want affordable higher education. The list goes on and on and on. And I just, but the fact is we have to come to the table to figure out how we get it done. And that is why I wrote my book, Grounded, for this exact reason. How to bring people together. How we bring people from all walks of life to be able to, number one, use the 2 years that your God gave you and listen first to what everybody has to say. They've taught us to categorize people, to divide people based on division. And that's not what we should be doing. The fact is not everybody in groups thinks the same way. Everybody thinks a little different. That's what makes America great. But in order to come to a place where we can have good decisions, we have to have good dialogues. We have to listen. We have to listen critically. We have to be able to compromise. And we have to build on policy that helps people. If we do that, our democracy will be strong again, and it will stay that way for generations to come. So I'm done with my opening statement, and I would get to your questions right now. Go ahead, folks.
Well, thank you so much for that, Senator Tester. Our first question is, to what extent has collaboration among senators changed since you were first elected in 2006?
Well, I will tell you that, and I think there's a number of reasons for this that I can get to in a bit, but I don't think it's gotten better. I think it's gotten worse. And I think the reason it's gotten worse is because of Citizens United, the Supreme Court's case that was passed about 10 years ago now, that has allowed unlimited amounts of money to come into these campaigns. The campaigns have become longer, they become more intense, and they become much more pointed. And I think that's had a huge negative impact on our ability to work across the aisle. The other thing that's had an impact is leadership. We have not been using in the United States Senate our committee structure as was originally established. We're just, leadership just takes bills to the floor without using, for the most part, without using our committee structure. And then oftentimes bipartisan bills that should be taken to the floor are never taken to the floor at all, even though they have gone through committee. So that has also, I think, made it more partisan. I think the process that our forefathers set up when the country was established really is incredibly brilliant in that through the committee process, you not only get a chance to hear from folks on the ground on why a bill is good or why a bill is bad, but it also gives an opportunity for amendments and bringing both sides of the aisle to a compromise point where you can get bipartisan support when that bill gets on the floor. If you bypass that committee work, then all that is gone. And let me give you an example of the tax bill that was put out a couple of years ago. It was a big bill. It was that thick. I don't know. There, you might have seen it on TV. The fact is that it was very thick and very complicated. Tax policy is complicated. And we were given that bill a few hours before we expected to vote on it. And it wasn't crafted in committee. It was crafted by a half a dozen folks in a back room in the Capitol. And I was very frustrated with that. And I'm very frustrated with that process. And by the way, as it turned out, since we passed that tax bill, it added, even when the economy was popping, it was adding $1 trillion a year to our national debt because we passed that damn bill. And if we had taken the time and put it through committee, we could have done some tax reform that made sense for this country, made sense for small business and working families and family farm and ranch agriculture and everybody. But that wasn't the agenda that was behind that bill. And so that's where we're at. Do I think it's going to get better? I do think it's going to get better. I hope it does get better. If there is anything that the incidents on January 6th taught us is that if we don't come together as a country, then we're going to be in trouble. And the division that has transpired for the last 4 years and before, hopefully will come to an end and we can start bringing people together.
Oh, thank you. I think we all do hope it will get better. So another question is, the anomalies of the recent election aside, do you think the Electoral College still serves the country? And how do you reconcile large population states with large land states, but smaller populations like Montana?
Well, look, just to refresh people's memories, not that it needs to be refreshed, but what was done last Wednesday was to try to stop the certification of the Electoral College, which would have voided the election. And I think that we need to take a look at the Electoral College. I have thought for some time, long before Obama was elected, by the way, so it was pre-2006, before I got in the United States Senate, that the Electoral College was a relic from the past, and that we have the technology now to count every vote, as we've done in the last election, that a person casts, and be able to go off the popular vote. I think it would be much better. But it's going to be tough to get anything done on the Electoral College. In other words, go to the popular vote instead of the Electoral College, because it does weigh benefits for more rural states. That's a fact. But I've always been one that agreed with the court decision on one man, one vote. One woman, one vote, more politically correct, one man, one woman, one vote. Because the truth is that that is the way the country should be set up. It shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter differently. And so the next question would be, geez, John, if you feel that way, then why would you support two senators from every state? I think there does need to be a balance in policymaking at the federal level. And I think that's where the two senators come in. Once again, I think the forefathers were smart in setting it up. And I think if you only had if you had the senators based on population, like the House is, then I think rural America would get totally left out of the equation. And so, so that's why I think there's a difference. So, long, short answer to your question was, is I think we really do need to take a look at the Electoral College and see if it still meets the needs of this country as it did in its first implementation. See if it's still necessary.
Yeah, that leads into another question that we had that came in that said, what are the unmet needs of rural America, including those who feel that the system has let them down?
Well, look, I mean, I think the unmet needs in rural America, one of them we talked about before we went on this air, broadband. I think that it's much tougher to do business in rural areas, part of it's because of broadband, part of it's distance to our consumers. Those are challenges. I will tell you that I think that many of the unmet needs in Montana are unmet in other places, too. You know, water systems wore out across this country, but I can tell you from Montana's perspective, and they need to be rebuilt. Otherwise, we're going to be in trouble. And so I would say most of the unmet needs, let's just lump it into one general theory, and that is that I think most of the unmet needs deal with infrastructure. I do think there's there's challenges. There are other challenges like distance to market, but the truth is that those aren't things you're going to fix. That's what makes rural rural. You know, some would say, you know, we need to have more jobs in rural America. I think that you know, Montana over the last few years has done pretty well in that regard, and so you know, I can't complain. We've been pretty good at drawing in businesses for a number of reasons, not the least of which is access to public lands. And the outdoor opportunities that are in this state, they're like none other in the lower 48. So I would say most of the unmet needs are there. Although, if you want to get into healthcare, there's some real challenges with the healthcare costs and accessibility that may not be there for more urban areas. I know that both living in a small town and working on veterans issues in Montana, that's a big deal. I can tell you that a lot of the small schools are getting to a point where they've lost critical mass, and that is a real problem as far as educational opportunities for those kids. But once again, that can be supplemented with good broadband education too. So there's opportunities, but you have to have the infrastructure as a foundation to move it forward.
Well, you mentioned public lands. As we all know, public lands are so important to Montana and other Western states. Now that we have the first Native American nominated to lead the Department of Interior, how do you think this will impact the work you and Senator Daines can do in protecting these public lands?
Well, we'll see. I haven't had a chance to meet with nominee Holland yet. As you know, we have advice and consent in the Senate, so I have an opportunity to visit with all these folks and vote either for or against her confirmation. I don't know her very well, her being a House member, me being in the Senate. I have not met her yet. I congratulate her. It is a historic nomination. The scouting report is that she believes in the value of our public lands and protect them for future generations. I think that's a positive place to start. I do think that she's got a tough job ahead of her, and that there are people out there and continue to be that want to sell off our public lands. But we've passed a good bill, the Great American Outdoors Act, which fully funds the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which helps with access to public lands in a big, big way, so you don't have to be a millionaire to go hunting or fishing or hiking. It is a great step in the right direction. I can tell you that the Secretary Bernhardt, who was hell-bent on screwing that whole bill up after we passed it in Congress, he's going to be gone, hopefully. Well, not hopefully. Secretary Holland, assuming she gets confirmed, is going to have to implement that bill as Congress intended it, or she's going to be hearing from me very directly. I think she's gonna bring the Native American perspective to that job, which I think, quite frankly, is beneficial, because I think they tend to value the earth in a way that's pretty special and very meaningful. So I look forward to working with her, and I hope she's up for the task. It's a big job.
Yes, indeed. Another question that came in, it says, with Democrats now controlling Congress and the White House, are you worried about overreach?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I think that there's always that potential. I think we're seeing some of it already in the state legislature, as a matter of fact. But that aside, since the Senate is split down the middle, I think that it will behoove all of us to try to work across the aisle to try to get things done. Now, I will tell you that there are some in the United States Senate that will want a stonewall and not get anything done. Why they're in the Senate, it's beyond me. I don't know why people that just wants to stop everything would want to be in the Senate, but we have a few of them. With the Senate being split, though, I think that there's going to be opportunity to work across the aisle and get things done. And in the end, I don't think that's going to be near the problem as if we had a supermajority in the Senate and the House too. But the truth is that we haven't, the divided government has been so damn divided the last 2 years that we haven't gotten near the stuff done that we should have gotten done.
So another question that pertains to this is, do you expect Senator Schumer to reestablish the processes that have been eroded over the past 4 years?
Reestablish you're talking about the committee work and taking bills to the floor and actually debating them and compromising?
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I
do. I will tell you that I've been in the Democratic caucus for the last 4 years or however long we've been in the minority, and have heard the caucus express their frustration to Senator Schumer. And I think Senator Schumer knows that now that he is majority leader, things have to change.
With the Democrats now in the majority in the Senate, what issues are at the top of your list?
Well, oversight, we passed a lot of bills. Oversight, making sure that that the bills that allow veterans to be able to access care outside the VA if they can't get it inside the VA, making sure they work, making sure the electronic health records are being implemented, have been way, way, way behind the curve on that, way behind the curve. And so there's some stuff that deals with just delivery of healthcare that needs to be have good oversight that we've done. Dennis McDonough is the person that has been nominated to be the Secretary of the VA. He's a former Chief of Staff for President Obama. He's a smart cookie, and he's very, very well organized, and I think he's just the kind of person we need heading up the VA. On policy that we haven't got done yet, I will tell you that one thing that I think is nothing this country should be proud about is the fact that Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange do not have all of their maladies that have been backed up by scientific study covered. We did three of them here this last fall, but hypertension needs to be added to the list. And I can tell you hypertension was not added to that list because of the cost. And I am of the belief that if you don't cover the folks coming back from war, then you shouldn't send them to war to begin with. And so it will be a high priority for mine to get the folks with hypertension that served in Vietnam, that were exposed to Agent Orange, which is every damn one of them, to be able to get coverage from the VA for that issue. That's probably my big one. There's another issue very similar to Agent Orange that deals with the folks who served in the Middle East called burn pits, and it's the same thing where there were pits on the outside of bases where they burned garbage and disposable waste, medical waste, all sorts of crap. And those fumes, depending on the direction of the wind, went over the bases and exposed our servicemen and women to toxins that they shouldn't have been exposed to, that now those toxins are showing up with different cancers. That is a real problem. And so we're going to have to deal with that, too. I'll just tell you, we were able to, over the last 3 or 4 years, put a sizable amount of money into VA construction and clinics. And that's why we're seeing clinics go up. We just opened one in Great Falls, going to open one in Havre next week. Missoula should be done soon. Butte's got one coming. And I think Bozeman may too. So, all those I think are in the queue.
That sounds like a lot for your number one top of your list. So thank you so much for all the work you do there. Switching gears a little bit, with Democrats and Republicans and maybe Democrats actually outspending Republicans in political campaigns, do you think there's hope for significant campaign finance reform?
God, I'd love to say yes, but I just don't think so. I mean, I've got to tell you that if you guys are sick of watching the commercials, which I know you are, you ought to be the candidate, because it's even worse. I do not know why we don't come together as Democrats and Republicans and independents to put some sideboards on election funding like we had in Montana before a number of court cases, Citizens United, McCutcheon, there's a couple more. I think that there was a decision that was made from the court, previous Citizens United, that equated money and speech, and there is some equation there, but I will tell you that I don't agree with that decision either, because it allows people, millionaires, billionaires, trillionaires, to put so much money into these campaigns that it's really hard if you're a candidate, if you've made a decision and made one of these corporations mad, because now corporations can put money into these campaigns through C4s. It's really hard to fight them off. And so consequently, I don't think we're doing justice to the voter out there that really, truly wants to know what's going on. We have an advantage in Montana in that your elected officials, for the most part, should be getting out and doing town hall meetings and doing interviews with press and so you know where they stand on issues. So that when folks come in and try to make some of them something they're not, that you know, based on the information that you've already gotten, that through the news media and public forums, that really isn't the way it is. But that only helps incumbents. It doesn't help the challengers. The challengers don't have that ability. And so I really hope that we can come together and, you know, limit the amount of dark money, eliminate the amount of dark money coming into these campaigns, and make sure that every dollar that comes into these campaigns, whether it's into a C4 or some other method, that all that money is totally transparent so that we know who's trying to influence us. It's ridiculous, the amount of money that went in my last campaign. It's ridiculous in the one that went into Daines and Bullock's campaign. It's totally out of control. The only people who's making rich are TV station owners. And they will tell you they're not even getting rich.
You're listening to KGVM Bozeman, presenting an Osher Lifelong Learning Institute Friday Forum featuring Senator John Tester and moderator Paula Beswick. The forum was recorded on January 15th, 2021.
We're getting questions about COVID vaccinations. So when do you think Montana, or do you even know when Montana will have enough of the vaccine to start the 1B vaccinations across the state?
I think Governor Gianforte opened up 1B, if my recollection is correctly. I know too. Folks who have pre-existing conditions, for sure, it's been opened up to them. But the problem here is we don't have enough vaccines. We have the people to put it in the arms, but we don't have enough vaccines. And I pushed Operation Warp Speed's person who gets these vaccines and gets them out to the states that we needed more of them in Montana. I can tell you at the rate we're going right now, it'll be July of 2022 before everybody gets the vaccine. And that's not acceptable in my book. I don't think it's acceptable in President-elect Biden's book. That's why he put forth yesterday a proposal to invest some serious money into vaccine distribution. And we put a lot in already, but there hasn't been a lot of accountability with this administration, and that has continued. And we'll do our best to hold this next administration accountable. But the bottom line is we've got to do a better job. Right now it's kind of a blame game. When I talked to the man in Operation Warp Speed, he said it's because pharmaceutical companies aren't putting enough of it out. Pharmaceutical companies are claiming there's plenty on the shelves. They're just not getting it distributed to the states. And then some are claiming that the states don't have the capacity to put the vaccination into people's arms. I think all those are excuses, and I think they're all baloney. And I think that we just need to get the vaccines out, get them out there, get them done. I speak to this from personal experience. My wife has been fighting cancer since this pandemic started, and she can't get a vaccination. And the reason is because there's not enough there. And I think that is... that is not what we allocated the dollars for in the pandemic CARES package. And so folks need to step up.
I'm sorry to hear about your wife. Best to her.
She's doing fine, by the way. She's doing fine. I will tell you that the cancer survivors that are watching this right now know that we have incredible health care. If you can afford to get through the door, you get incredible health care. If you've got the insurance, you can do incredible health care. And she has had incredible healthcare, and she's been able to get through this treatment very, very well because of the healthcare professionals we have in the state. And she's doing fine because of that. The pandemic is a different issue, and it's actually more challenging right now than the cancer.
Well, I'm glad to hear she's doing well with her cancer treatment. I guess one step at a time sometimes. We're hearing stories like that all across the state and across the country. So our best to you and your wife.
We're not alone, and that's the problem. I mean, the fact is that this vaccine, we've known about this. We invested money into research and development. And by the way, many of the techniques that were used by the military on threats by other countries using K chemical warfare and those kind of things. We were able to use those techniques to get this vaccine out as quick as we did. Now we need to get it distributed. So it's until that's done, we certainly haven't had success.
During this climate change crisis that we seem to be under, and some people are calling it just, you know, climate change, and other people categorize it as climate crisis. But, you know, as a farmer in a, you know, dry area, how are your crops doing? How are you faring? And your other farmers around you?
Look, my wife and I took this farm over from my parents in 1978, so we've been at it a while now. This will be our 43rd harvest, God willing. We have seen the climate change major league. And the thing about climate change is some people get benefits from additional rainfall. Some people end up in a drought situation. We've been very lucky in North Central Montana. We've gotten, we've had some decent crops. We haven't been on the drought side of things. We've actually gotten moisture. But I can tell you that we've been very, very lucky. Northeastern part of the state, 2 years ago, got so much rain during harvest that they lost their crop in the field. It wasn't even fit for cattle feed. I can tell you that 2 days ago here, we had 70, 75 mile winds. And by the way, that isn't the first time this winter that's happened. That's probably the third time this winter. And when I went out in front of my Quonset today to bring out the truck and to load up a load of wheat to haul to market, we had to shovel away dirt because there was so much dirt in the air, and it was all over. Even the chemical fallow was blown. And so there was a lot of land changing hands because of that wind. I don't remember those kind of storms when I was a kid, I'll just tell you. I mean, the wind's always blowing there, but not like that. I mean, not like when you walk outside and you weigh the amount I weigh, which is plenty, and have a hard time keeping your feet, you know the wind is blowing. And we've had other examples. We've had a reservoir that my dad built in the 1940s, never been out of water, filled up with water when they were digging it. And it was dry for 3 years in a row in the early 2000s. So there's anything but stability to our climate right now. The question becomes, what are we going to do about it? And that's really the question. We've seen the impacts. I know they're real. I think every farmer out there knows they're real, if they admit it. It's just not changing weather patterns that Montana's been known so much for. I'm going to tell you what I think we need to do about it. And I've been in conversation with folks in the Senate about this. It seems like bad information is the standard now, and there's a lot of bad information on climate change. And if we don't do the mitigation right, it could put people out of work. If we do the mitigation right, it could put a whole lot of people to work. And it would take a lot of stress off our coffers in the United States Treasury, because we're paying for disasters to the tunes of tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars every year. So what I think needs to happen is we need to go out and work just like a campaign, and go out and listen to people, find out what their ideas are, try to get an understanding that climate change is real, because there's plenty, even plenty in the Senate, that don't think it's real. But find out if we can get folks to think it's real, and then talk about common sense solutions to fixing the problem. And I think if we do that, it's going to change the way we do business a little bit, but I don't think it's going to put anybody out of business. In fact, I think it's going to employ more people. I think it's going to set our economy up for success in the 21st century. And I think it's going to allow our kids and our grandkids to be able to live on this earth and future generations after that. So it's a big issue. It's an important issue. But I don't think we can just walk up and say, you know, we're going to pass something and this is the way it's going to be. I think we got to do some listening on this one. It's an important issue. And I just think that it's going to be really important to get out there and listen and try to find common ground and come up with something that works. I think it's entirely possible. I think it's easier to fix this than it is our campaign system, okay? So it can be done.
Wow, that's the most positive thing I've heard. Thank you. Okay, another question. It's a kind of a two-part question, but and I guess it falls right into climate change as well. Why are so many of us so easily susceptible and welcoming to blatant lies from our elected officials? And how do we reestablish a level playing field for civil discourse and policy debate based on objective facts?
I maybe it's human nature. I don't know why can go around the world several times and the truth can't make it across the street. I think you take a look at the platform. For those of you on the call that don't know, I'm not a big fan of President Trump. I've not been a big fan from the get-go. Anybody that declares bankruptcy for six times before they get to be president of the United States tells you what kind of president. If you want to give him credit for the economy, that's fine. But it was an artificial economy because it put $1 trillion in debt every year and on our kids, far more than previous presidents. And so our economy should have been whipping. But another thing that aggravated me about President Trump is that he'd get up and he would say things over and over and over again, whether it was denigration of our free press or whether it was stealing an election before the election was even held, and then doubling down on it afterwards and having a bunch of people in Congress that said, yeah, he's right, when they knew better. So I think things will change with a president that has some ethics, who may screw up plenty of times, but I don't think we'll lie intentionally. And so I think that will help. But what I tell people is that, you know, I mean, finding the truth is hard. You got to go to as many sources as you can. And the problem that I have with Facebook and a lot of these accounts, and they should be given some kudos for the work they've done in the last week, but the truth is that you end up talking to the same people that believe the same thing you do, the same way you do, and it just tends to get that train going down the tracks in the wrong direction pretty fast. So what I tell folks is, I try to do as much reading as I can because I value all media, but I really value print media, and I think it's important that you reach out to as many different sources as you can, even sources like Reuters and British Broadcasting and Canadian news, and then if you put it all together, you can usually find out where the truth is. But it's not easy.
Okay. So, you know, just sort of ruminating on some of this and soaking in words, it's, you know, I don't know how we're going to get ourselves out of this sometimes with the social media morass that people get sucked into. But we're going to switch gears. I know you don't have a whole lot of time, so I'm trying to hit as many topics as possible with the questions that are coming in. But this one is about transportation, an issue in rural America. And what are your thoughts on transportation? And I'm going to add on to that, you know, with Pete Buttigieg potentially being the secretary there, what do you think will be happening, or what kind of strides can we make?
So it's interesting because transportation is a big issue. I know that this is originating out of Bozeman, and I know that there has been a push by some in Bozeman and some in Missoula and across the southern tier, by the way, Billings, to get the old Hiawatha route done back in place for the railroads, which, by the way, I think would be good. I do think it could offer some real economic benefit to the southern part of the state. What I don't want to have happen is I don't want to have them do it at the expense of the Empire Builder, which runs across the northern part of the state. So I think we've got to make sure both of them are there. The bills on those have come back pretty high, but I do think that if Amtrak is able to get better service, whoever ends up running Amtrak in this administration really works on timeliness and getting better service, I think it could work. From an overall transportation standpoint, this pandemic has raised hell with the airlines in a big way. Making sure that we have competitive air service in the state is critically important. It's hard to even say that now because the planes are running at partial capacity because of the pandemic. But making sure that we have the FAA puts down the kind of structure that allows these planes to take off and land in a energy efficient way and a timeliness way is going to be really important. We've got some work to do there. And I think Buttigieg will be good on that. Just straight investment into the highways. We're falling behind on our road system. And it's just not in Montana. It's everywhere that I've been across the country. We need some serious investment in our roads. But there's also other things out there that's going to affect transportation, like self-driving cars and technology that's going to allow that to happen. And it's going to be interesting for people on my part to be able to get the information that we need to make policies that will work for that, because I think it's coming. I think it's coming a lot faster than I think. And I think it's going to require some government support to make it happen right. But it could result in some pretty good efficiencies and safety improvements that we don't have right now. So all those things. I don't know, from Buttigieg's standpoint, I don't know Pete Buttigieg other than when I've seen him on TV. He's been around a while, but I haven't seen him. I know he's smart as hell. And it's going to be interesting to see what he brings to the table and where his priorities are. But in the end, I think there's a lot of places to put it. And if he puts it in the rails, there's certainly things you can do there. And haven't even really got into high-speed transportation when it comes to rail service. But there's also some things that need to be done from our air service. And then we drive our roads every day, so we all know what the challenges are there.
We've been getting quite a few questions about public education in Montana. So I'm just going to sort of group it all up into saying, what are your concerns for the future of our public education here? And do you have concerns? One question says without naming names, but, you know, we have a new governor who perhaps doesn't even strongly in public education. And how do you think that this is going to play out?
I don't know what the agenda is behind the people who want to destroy public education, but I've witnessed it both in the state legislature and at the federal level. I believe that we are the strongest country in the world because of our public education system. I believe that we have a democracy, even albeit fragile right now, because we have educated people. I don't think a democracy works where the population is illiterate. Public education is the key to that. There was a court case that I'll name names, and both Senator Daines and Representative Gianforte signed on to that allowed public dollars to go to private schools. Private schools, by the way, that there aren't a lot of rules around. If you're missing three fingers on your left hand, they might not allow you to go to that school. That's not the way it is in public education. Everybody gets together, whether you're the rancher's kid or the farmer's kid, whether you're owned a business in town or whether you work for a business, all those kids went to school in the same school and they learned how to get along. They weren't separated by income or perceived IQ advantages. Everybody went to the same school. Everybody learned from one another. Everybody learned from the teachers. And you end up with the strongest country in the world for centuries. I am a big believer in public education. And if, in fact, we continue to allow people to take money out of public education, whether that's K-12 or whether that's higher ed, and make it less effective for K-12 and unaffordable for higher ed, I think it's the definition of shooting ourselves in the foot as a nation. And so I would be very vocal if I were you, if you believe in public education. I think it, like I said, I can go back. But the truth is besides my parents, the people who made the biggest impact on my life are the teachers today that taught me in K-12 and when I went to college. And I just think that we can't forget that. We can't lose sight of that.
Montana voters rejected Democrats across the board in 2020. Why do you think that was, and what could Democrats do to appeal to Montana voters?
Well, a couple things. I think because of the pandemic, we weren't on the doors knocking door to door. And I think that's critically important in a state like Montana for a Democrat. If you're not on the doors, if you aren't talking to people, there are a few districts where you can do that as a Democrat, but I'd say 90% of them, if you aren't on the doors, knocking on the doors, you're not going to win. And that's what happened in many of the cases. People weren't on the doors. They weren't telling people what they stood for. They weren't telling people what they were about. They weren't meeting them eyeball to eyeball where they lived. And it cost dearly. That's the first thing. And I think that's probably the most important thing. Because what goes with that, if you don't have the folks on the doors, is you don't have people out there talking about what you stand for, whether that's public education or whether that's public lands or whether that's making sure that you have good infrastructure or whatever it is you want to talk about. I think that Democrats do a bad job of it. And we end up talking about stuff that that meets meets the concerns of the far left, but we don't end up talking about folks who talking about the issues that meets the concerns of the folks in the middle. And in a state like Montana, there are some people on the far left, but there ain't a lot of them. And there's far more people in the middle. And those are the folks who are going to decide the election. So I think that's why. I really do. I think it's because we didn't get our message out and our candidates were out there being seen. And I think Montana's an eyeball-to-eyeball state. Governor Schwinden once told me one time, by the time you get done running a statewide election, you have looked everybody in the eye that's going to vote for you and going to vote against you. That didn't happen this last election, because the folks weren't out there. And it was for a good reason. I'm not being critical of them. The pandemic was real and people's lives are on the line, and I get it. But I think in the end, that really hurt us.
Well, it's nice to know that hopefully, you know, pandemic being gone, that people can be out knocking on doors again.
Well, I think in Montana is a state where we split tickets. And if you give people a reason to vote for you, they'll vote for you. If you don't give them a reason to vote for you, they won't.
Well, thanks for keep giving us a reason to vote for you. And then there have been a lot of questions about the impending impeachment. I don't know how to encapsulate those all other than to say, you know, do you have any insights on how you think that the impeachment will go? You know, when you think that it will be brought to the Senate and what the reaction is going to be?
I don't know when it's going to be brought to the Senate. I assume it's going to be brought fairly early next week, or in the middle of next week. I think our number one obligation in the Senate is make sure we get cabinet confirmed. Again, let me give you the Department of Homeland Security, for example. The acting secretary resigned about five days ago. I think it's important we get a person confirmed in the position of Secretary of Homeland Security. For obvious reasons, the title would imply what those reasons are. The same thing for Defense, Treasury, Secretary of State. Those are all really, really important. We need to get people in those positions confirmed as quickly as possible. That needs to be our first obligation in the United States Senate. They're talking about bifurcating the days, so you do half on impeachment, half on confirmation. I think that's fine. As far as I'm concerned, we can stay in Washington. I'm going back Tuesday. We can stay in Washington, D.C. until we get everything done. I think this impeachment hearing is going to be a heck of a lot shorter than the one that was done a year ago, because the folks who were on the jury were in the building when it was being attacked. So they know as well as anybody what transpired there. So what I anticipate is going to happen is we'll take it up, spend a half a day on confirmations, half a day on impeachment. That'll go on for 3 or 4 days. Who knows? But I'm guessing 3 or 4 days, and then the impeachment will be done. Let me say a word about the impeachment. I think the president committed impeachable offenses. From my experience on July 6th, both watching his speech and watching what happened at the Capitol, I've said this before, there has to be accountability. There has to be consequences to actions. If there aren't, it will happen again. All that being said, if this turns into a partisan vote again, I think all it will do is empower the domestic terrorists that broke into the Capitol on January 6th. I think it is incredibly important that folks try to do the right thing in this example, because I will tell you what happened on the 6th scared the hell out of me. And I'm sure anybody that watched on TV, it would have scared the hell out of you too. And anybody that's been paying attention since then should be very, very nervous about what's transpired here. These folks, because the president got up and said what he did and has been saying it for months, if not years, are in a position where they believe that everybody that serves in the United States Capitol are traitors. I see it just the opposite. I see the people who want to come in and protest and do it peacefully or somebody that I admire and respect, and they have every right to do that. But the minute they broke through those fences, the minute they went up the steps, the minute they broke into the Capitol, all bets are off. And I think they're hell-bent on destroying the country. And we have to hold the people accountable that enabled them to do that. And that's my belief. We'll see what happens. I'm not entirely hopeful that it's going to be a bipartisan vote.
Well, thank you. So this is my personal question. Have you thought about running for president?
Will you be my VP? I am flattered you would ask that to me. I truly am. There are many people on this call. I see some of their names that know that it would be best if John Tester stayed a farmer, because that's what he does the best, and I probably don't do that as good as I should. Look, I'm flattered anybody would say that. I truly am. But I think that's the loneliest job in the world. I think it's an incredibly hard job, and all you have to do is look at everybody from Lincoln to Obama, and you can see the impact it has, the pressure on the person, and how they age in that job. I'm really focused on trying to do the best job I can do to represent Montana and be a United States Senator and help move this country forward. And that's a hell of a job. It's a big job. It's a job that sometimes isn't very easy. But it's a job that I am incredibly honored to have, and I enjoy it. And I will continue to work as hard as I can until I don't think I can do that job anymore. At that point in time, then I will become a full-time farmer again.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for your wise words and taking the time to share with us. I know this is an incredibly busy time for you, not only in DC, but being able to be home. And we appreciate you taking your big sandy time to spend with us. I'm sure you don't get enough of it, so we do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Paula. And I would just say thanks for everybody else for taking time out today. I look forward for this pandemic to get behind us so I can start doing some town hall meetings and we can start having these conversations eyeball to eyeball. In the meantime, take care, be well, and stay safe. We'll talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.
You are listening to KGVM Bozeman, presenting an Osher Lifelong Learning Institute Friday Forum featuring Senator John Tester and moderator Paula Beswick. The forum was recorded on January 15th, 2021.